Can speak freely tonight. That microphone was intimidating this morning because I was afraid I was blowing several people out. And my mom said she nearly went like this. So it's hard because I felt like I was speaking so low as it was. I was speaking monotone. So I'll figure it out before too long so that y'all won't get too comfortable. Of course, nobody ever gets too comfortable when I speak, but too terribly comfortable. Appreciate the song service tonight. There's several songs we hadn't sung in a while, and I really enjoy getting to sing those songs, but appreciate Mike doing that this evening for us. We have been in the book of Deuteronomy the last couple of months in Bible class, and if you've been following along with the 30-day challenges, we have been going through the five books of Moses, and we'll be wrapping up with Deuteronomy in the next couple of days. And so I just wanted to kind of highlight a few things from Deuteronomy, because I think it's such an important book. It really shows the simple plan that God has for us. And again, we understand that this is Old Testament, that this is Old Law, but most of the things that we're going to be looking at are principles that are eternal principles. They're something that were before the law of Moses was given during the patriarchal dispensation, and they're things that also apply during the Christian dispensation in which we live. So if you'd like to turn to Deuteronomy chapter 6, we'll be starting in verse 10 this evening. A few years ago, a famous politician was talking to businessmen in general. He told them they didn't build that, and it went over really well because a lot of them had spent a lot of time and money building their businesses. But he had some points too as well. We have an infrastructure that we've been blessed with. I think it was the president who was in office when I was first born. He was only in office for a few months, but Eisenhower, somebody during the Eisenhower administration came up with the brilliant idea of an interstate highway system, and we have enjoyed that for a number of years, the fruition of that. And so there are certain things that we come into that we realize that we really didn't build ourselves, though we have a part in it. But when it comes to serving God, this is a structure that God has put together. He expects us to build on that foundation that He gives to us. But as the Israelites are going into Canaan, He points something out to them. He's giving them a land that's already been improved. They're going into a land that's already got buildings, and it's already got roads, and it's just got all sorts of things. And many of these things were not destroyed in the wars that followed, because if you'll recall, God sent the hornet ahead of them, and the hornet drove out a bunch of them as the Israelites came through. So it wasn't just the Israelites who were carrying out God's will. God also used the natural things such as the hornet to drive out the people. I think there's three separate mentions of God using the hornet as they came in to Canaan. But Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 10, "When the Lord your God brings you into the land He swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you, a land with large flourishing cities that you did not build, houses filled with all kinds of good things that you did not provide, wells that you did not dig, and vineyards and olive groves that you did not plant. Then when you eat and are satisfied, be careful that you do not forget the Lord who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery." I don't know about you, but there are few things that disgust me more than a child that has grown up in the parents' house and has enjoyed all the benefits that the parents have provided for them, and then the child turns out ungrateful. And they act as if everything that their parents have, they deserve. And they just don't express any appreciation for it. And so God's just pointing out, don't you forget where this came from. This was a gift for me. And also the idea they weren't to forget God, just as we're not to forget God. In Deuteronomy chapter 7 and verse 6, he now points out something that is true of us as well. And it is perhaps, if it's not the greatest privilege we have, it's one of the greatest privileges we have. Deuteronomy 7, verse 6. "You are a people holy to the Lord." This word in this context means set apart. "You are a people holy to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you out of all the peoples on the face of the earth to be His people, His treasured possession." Now, he reminds them throughout the years that they weren't chosen and they weren't given the gifts that they were given because of their righteousness. Rather, they were going into Canaan to punish a people who were unrighteous and sinful. Obviously, Abram was righteous before God. He was even called God's friend. And Abraham certainly was pleasing to God. But again, as we look at the people of Israel, they were set apart not because of their choice, but because of God's choice. We have an opportunity in this world, every person that is born, to become a Christian, to be baptized into Christ, to have their sins washed away, to be in a covenant position with God, to be holy. But it's because he chose us in that way, not because we chose him. And so there needs to be an appreciation. And the fact that we are his treasured possession, we talked about that in Bible class, this particular verse last week. But the idea that God treasures us, that just kind of boggles my mind. There's some other things that I would think maybe he would look upon us as, but to be treasured, this is a privilege. In Deuteronomy chapter 8 now, in verse 10, Moses continues on with the conversation that God wants him to have with the Israelites. And he says this in verse 10 of Deuteronomy 8, "When you have eaten and are satisfied, praise the Lord your God for the good land he's given you. Be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God, failing to observe his commands, his laws and decrees that I'm giving you today. Otherwise, when you eat and are satisfied, when you build fine houses and settle down, and when your herds and flocks grow large and your silver and gold increase and all you have is multiplied, then your heart will become proud and you will forget the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery." Well, there are so many types and antitypes when we talk about the Israelites, the Lord's people, and when we talk about the promised land, and when we talk about the land of slavery. Every person before they had their sins washed away were a captive. They were a slave to sin. They were under Satan's control and apart from God. When we became Christians, we enjoyed and continue to enjoy many spiritual benefits. But it's, again, it is not because we are so good that we enjoy these things. It's because God has given them to us as a reward. But again, it's because of God, not because of us. It was his decision, not ours. We can become proud, and we can think of all the things we have and all the things we've accumulated, should we wish to forget that everything we have, physical and spiritual, is from God. But it's a tremendous mistake. And so he's having Moses warn them, don't forget God. Don't forget where you come from. Don't forget what you've been given. Don't be proud. In Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 19 now, what happens if they do forget? "If you ever forget the Lord your God and follow other gods and worship and bow down to them, I testify against you today that you will surely be destroyed. Like the nations the Lord destroyed before you, so you will be destroyed for not obeying the Lord your God." And now he's really starting to tie in this importance of obedience and of not following these idols, these false gods. We think, well, we don't follow idols in America. Well, every one of us probably have one sitting in our living room, maybe one in our bedroom, maybe one in several rooms that if we're not careful, we'll end up putting before God. We have all sorts of things that go before God sometimes, and anything that we put between us and God becomes an idol. They certainly had the idols of the false gods that they worshipped, and at the same time, I think sometimes we do as well. Wealth and power and just different things fall into that category. But he says, if you ever forget God, he'll destroy them. Going on in Deuteronomy chapter 10 now, and verse 12. Well, we looked at this morning, but I did want to just touch on it. Deuteronomy 10 and verse 12. What does the Lord your God ask of you but to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all of his ways, to love him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and to observe the Lord's commands and decrees I'm giving you today for your own good? Well, there's a lot there, but this idea that God expects us to fear him, to walk in his ways, to love him and to serve him with all of our heart. Let me ask you this. How well are you doing in that service? Is all of your heart in that, and with all your soul, and to observe the commands? Well, in chapter 11 and verse 13, he tells us one of the benefits of doing that, one of the rewards. Deuteronomy 11:13. If you faithfully obey the commands I'm giving you today, to love the Lord your God and to serve him with all your heart and all your soul, then I will send rain on your land in its season, both autumn and spring rains, so that you may gather in your grain, new wine, and oil. I will provide the grass and the fields for your cattle, and you will eat and be satisfied. Be careful, or you'll be enticed to turn away and worship other gods and bow down to them. Then the Lord's anger will burn against you, and he will shut the heavens so that it will not rain, and the ground will yield no produce, and you'll soon perish from the good land the Lord is giving you. Well, we understand that there are times where it rains on the just and the unjust. We're told that. But we also need to understand that something as simple as rain can also be a reward, and the withholding of rain can also be a punishment. I think God uses all sorts of rain in our life and lack of rain in our life to get our attention. And I guess the question is, does he have our attention? Or do we just continue to go in the wrong direction? Faithful obedience to God's commands results in great blessing. We enjoy so many different things. But again, we look in verse 16, be careful. Over and over and over in this, we see be careful. And now in Deuteronomy 11, verse 18, I just want to read the first few words, because the other part has already been stated earlier in Deuteronomy. But in Deuteronomy 11, verse 18, he says, fix these words of mine in your hearts and in your minds. I've always liked that example that people use about this fixing of God's words, an instrument that you put within a missile or within a rocket or within a spaceship. But it's programmed. It is fixed upon a point. And once you have fixed it upon that point, to that point, it's going to go. Sometimes we find ourselves so far away from God and we wonder, how did I ever get here? And the answer is that we're failing to fix the words of God in our hearts and in our minds. We're failing to aim for heaven. And when we do that, when we're not fixed in that way, fix these words of mine in your hearts and minds, then we're not going to be able to reach that which God wants us to reach. And then verse 26 of Deuteronomy 11. See, I'm setting before you today a blessing and a curse. The blessing if you obey the commands of the Lord your God that I'm giving you today, the curse if you disobey the commands and turn away from all that I command you today by following other gods which you have not known. One of the things that always just kind of boggles the mind is this. Heaven is going to be filled with people who planned on going to heaven. Hell is going to be filled with people who did not plan on going to heaven, and with people who did not plan on going to heaven on God's terms. They thought, well, I'll take that heaven, but I don't think I'll take the way he wants me to go. I might like this, I might like this, but I'm not too wild about this, but I'm still going to heaven. No. Either we have these things that God has set before us and we choose, I'm going to do all these things, or we choose not to accept the reward. But I want to say again, heaven is going to be filled with people who planned on being in heaven. And I think that's something, even though this is maybe overly simplistic, it's something for us to think about, and it's something for us to plan on as far as our families and all through the generations. In Deuteronomy chapter 12, he says this, and again, here's that phrase, be careful. Deuteronomy chapter 12 and verse 28, be careful to obey all these regulations that I'm giving you today so that it may always go well with you and your children after you, because you will be doing what is good and right in the eyes of the Lord your God. I look back over the years and I think of the different things we've gone through. We've had some health problems in our family, but we've also been blessed with very good health. We've had some money struggles in our family, but we've also been blessed with tremendous physical blessings. We've had some things that weren't fair that happened to our family, and yet we've had a lot of things that have occurred that we didn't deserve and weren't fair on the other side. When you think about it, when you look back over the years, when we're faithful, it always goes well with us. Maybe not everything goes the way we want it to, and maybe that there's some struggle associated with this. But when we're careful to obey God's regulations, it goes well with us and well with our children. Now I want to turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 29. We're getting very close to the end of Moses' life. And he has something for them that he really wants them to consider, because there is always going to be this struggle during this era between idols and God. And I want to say again, even though we may not bow down to these blocks of wood or the different idols that they served, we still have idols within our life. And so these words are just as fresh and just appropriate to us as they were to the people of this time. But in 29 verse 9, Moses is reminding them that this is a covenant, a contract, an agreement between them and God. It's a binding agreement. Carefully follow the terms of this covenant so that you may prosper in everything you do. All of you are standing today in the presence of the Lord your God, your leaders and chief men, your elders and officials, all the other men of Israel, together with your children and your wives and the aliens living in your camp who chop your wood and carry your water. You're standing here in order to enter into a covenant with the Lord your God and to confirm this day as his people, so that he may be your God as he promised you and swore to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The tribes of Israel are assembled before Moses today, or in front of Moses, but they're assembled before God. And they're entering into a covenant, and this covenant is going to require an oath on their part. They're going to swear to do these things, and then God will do these other things for them. The formal covenant language is, I will be your God, and you will be my people. And we see that contained within this that we just read. Confirm you this day as his people, that he may be your God. But he goes on down, and he talks about what's going to happen as they go into these nations that have idols. And what's going to happen to those who are stubborn enough and wicked enough to follow these idols. When such a person who would follow an idol after making this oath, when such a person hears the words of this oath, he invokes a blessing on himself and therefore thinks, I will be safe even though I persist in going my own way. This will bring disaster on the watered land as well as the dry. The Lord will never be willing to forgive him. His wrath and his zeal will burn against that man. All the curses written in this book will fall upon him, and the Lord will blot out his name from under heaven. The Lord will single him out from all the tribes of Israel for disaster, according to the curses of the covenant written in this book of the law. The idea is this: if we decide we're going to leave God and we're going to go into sin, and we think that we can persist in that sin, continue in it, and still be okay because we are people of the covenant, we have to understand that there is destruction awaiting us, that God is going to set his face against us. And if God is against us, no one can rescue us. We know that if God is for us, no one can be against us. But if God is against us, no one can help us. And so all these curses will fall upon them. I think about that today. When you read the book of Jude, and you read Jude, who is Christ's brother here on earth, Jude, who had rejected Christ as anything special. He certainly didn't think he was a prophet, nor did he think he was the Son of God. And then he saw irrefutable evidence that allowed him to understand Jesus was the Son of God. And now, when you read the book of Jude, Jude is a follower of Christ, doesn't even consider himself worthy to identify himself as a brother of Christ. But he's writing to the church all over, and he says, I wanted to write you and encourage you about different things, but he felt like instead he needed to write them and warn them about the things that they were getting into. Part of the problem that they were involved with was they were trying to change grace into a license for immorality. God's grace is sufficient to cover it, was their idea. I saw something the other day, Carolyn pointed out to me, where somebody was involved in sin and somebody was trying to console them by saying sin is sin, as if we all have sin, and we're all going to sin, and you just go right ahead, as if somehow you can persist in sin. We are all sinners. We've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, but the requirement has always been for sin that we repent, and on God's terms. And he's talking to a people who think that they're okay because they took an oath, they signed an agreement, they're within a covenant position with God, and they think they don't have to carry out their part of the covenant to receive God's part of the covenant. It was true back then, it's just as true today. And so he warns them that God will be set against them when that happens. And then in chapter 30, the last passage that we're going to look at starts in verse 11. And it's really a great way, when you think about it, for Moses to kind of sum up what they've been talking about and then to just kind of give them a place to conclude on. He's still going to have some other things to say, mind you, but this in chapter 30 is just really a great summation. Starting in verse 11. Now, what I'm commanding you today is not too difficult for you or beyond your reach. It's not up in heaven so that you have to ask who will ascend into heaven to get it and proclaim it to us so that we may obey it. Nor is it beyond the sea so you have to ask who will cross the sea to get it and proclaim it to us so that we may obey it. No, the word is very near you. It is in your mouth and in your heart so that you may obey it. See, I set before you today life and prosperity, death and destruction. For I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, and to keep his commands, decrees, and laws. Then you will live and increase, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land you're entering to possess. But if your heart turns away, and you're not obedient, and if you are drawn away to bow down to other gods and worship them, I declare to you this day that you will certainly be destroyed. You will not live long in the land you're crossing the Jordan to enter and possess. This day, I call heaven and earth as witness against you that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. I've always liked this part because this seems like an obvious choice to me. Life and blessings, or do I choose death and curses? But he doesn't stop there. He says, now choose life. This was a people that needed help on that. I think we are too. We have to choose. Now choose life so that you and your children may live and that you may love the Lord your God, listen to his voice, and hold fast to him, for the Lord is your life. It goes on for a while after that. We understand that. But what a great summation of all this. The question for us as we live some, 3,400 years after this event, and we live under the Christian dispensation, is this. Are we choosing life? Or are we choosing death and curses? Because we really are the ones that choose. When we kneel before God on Judgment Day, what God gives to us will be what we chose. And the thing that I just find incredible is, despite the mistakes in my life, despite the sin that I've had in my life, despite all the things that I have fallen short of God's glory in, because I have tried to do my best to come back on his terms, if I continue to do that, if you continue to do that, you'll have life eternal. not because you deserve it, but because that is God's covenant for you today. The question is, have you chosen to accept the terms of that covenant? And if you have, are you living according to the terms of that covenant? Invitation's open. If you're ready to become a Christian, we'd love to help you with that. If you need the prayers of the congregation, won't you come and let us know while we stand and sing?